from starting the top of Mem Vav of an Aleph, the two dots, three lines down. So we're continuing with the sugya about a tanel. This is a minor who marries herself off without the consent or acquiescence of her father. So she's acting on her own in a place or in a situation where she really doesn't have the ability to marry herself off. So before or until this point, we've discussed the issue of whether nitratia av. What happens if the father actually agrees, or do we think the father agrees? If the father is silent, is that automatic agreement to what his daughter did? In this instance, we're going to say what happens, right? Who is able to undermine the kiddushin that this katana establishes? See, it's markatana shenitkatsha shlulat avia. Again, this katana acted on her own and went ahead without her father's knowledge and married herself off and accepted kiddushin. So Amar Rav, Rav says benhi uvena viha yucholim la'akev, that she and her father can reject the marriage. The way the Rashi interprets this, Rashi says that means that she until her father agrees to the Kiddushin, can reject the Kiddushin. Once her father agrees to the Kiddushin, then her acquiescence is not necessary anymore. Number one, because the father can marry her off against her will. And number two, she was the one who accepted the Kiddushin to start with. So according to Rashi, Rav's statement is that he can reject the marriage, and she, until her father acquiesces to the marriage, can also reject the marriage. Tosfos, on the other hand, gives an alternative explanation suggesting that the girl, even after the father's acquiescence, can reject this marriage. Why is that? Because when do we say that a father can marry off his daughter b'al korcha without her agreeing or without her consenting to it? That's when the father was the one who took the initiative and married her off. Then he can do it against her will. In this instance, who was the one who generated the kiddushin? It wasn't the father. The father is just jumping on the bandwagon and saying, okay, it's good, it's good. So in that instance, we won't say that she can marry without her acquiescence, and he can't force the marriage to go through about korcha. And she, even maybe after her father's agreement to the marriage, can also say, I really don't want the marriage, despite the fact that she was the one who generated the marriage. So the Tosfos gives that alternative possibility in Ravasi. So the other opinion is Ravasi Damar Avia Velohi, that only her father has the right to reject the marriage. She does not have the right to reject the marriage. A little back what David is saying, that she's really not relevant in this whole picture. It's her father that's relevant here. So Etave Rav Huna the Ravasi. So Rav Huna challenged this position of Ravasi. Ramilachir Barav the Ravasi. Im Ma'en Yuma'en Avia. So but here we're talking about a case, a Parsha Mishpatim, a case of Mifuta, a case where the woman has been seduced. Here we have a katana who was seduced. And then afterwards, we have to decide what to do. Now, either she has to go and marry this individual who has seduced her and remain with him, or he has to pay the fine to the father, and the father can refuse to have a marriage. So it says, Ima'in Yama'in Avia, that her father does not want the marriage to continue. In that instance, then he's chayav to pay the knas, and she's not married to him. Over there, we only have that her father can say that she doesn't want to marry this person. He atzma minayin. How do we know that she can also reject such a marriage or continuation of such a marriage? The double lashon of miyun suggests that not only the father, but even she can reject the marriage. So now, what's the case over there? What's the instance? I mean, it sounds like she is mifuta. What does it mean that she was mifuta? That she was convinced or seduced into generating some form of kiddushin. And since she was convinced to have a form of kiddushin, what does the Torah say? The Torah says that not only does her father have the right, but also she has the right to end or terminate such a marriage, which would sound like Rav and not like Ravasi. So now the response, so Amalu Rav, lo tizul batar ipcha. Don't bring a proof from here. Don't misread, right, this pasuk. Why? Yachol gishnuye. Luchu, I can explain to you. Kugon, shepita u'selodushum ishut. Right, so that he actually seduced her, not for kiddushin, but simply he seduced her to spend some time with him. So that seduction does not generate kiddushin. So of course they can both reject it because there is no kiddushin here. Right, so Mar says, Peter the Shalom, the Shem Yishut, cry boy. What type of, why do you need a pasuk now? I mean, what's, if he seduced her for non-kiddushin, execution purposes, why do I need a pasuk to tell me that they can reject such a marriage? There is no marriage here. Why do I need such a rejection? No, we do need the pasuk to teach us. We have to teach us that she still has to, that he still has to pay the knas, kimufuta. Even in an instance, right, where the pasuk is not coming to teach us that hetera, that even that she can reject it or the father can reject it, but the pasuk tells us even if they do reject it, they're entitled to collect the knas of a mefuta. And you would have thought, when do they get the knas? When they agree to leave her or to have her marry this man who has seduced her, then she'll be entitled to like her dowry, her regular dowry. She's entitled to knas. But over here, where the father or the daughter refused to let her stay on with this individual, maybe that instance they would not be entitled to knas. That's what the pasuk comes to teach us, that they are entitled to knas, even though, right, this kiddushin or this pitui was not the same kiddushin. So I'm like Rav Yosef, ihaki. So now the way the Rishonim read this here is Rav Yosef is coming to support. This is benichusa. Rav Yosef says ihaki. I know the Tanina. This explains what we have in a brisa. Mahor yimarenu lo the isha. So choose tzricha imenu kiddushin. So it sounds like here when it says mahor yimarenu. Sounds like he has to pay or do an additional action to generate kiddushin. Wait a minute. If the original seduction was the same yishut, why does he need an additional kiddushin over here? Meaning that it would have sufficed the first kiddushin. So it must be like we're explaining now. This said that the pituya was not the same yishut, and nevertheless, they get the knas mefuta. Also, we don't prove anything about her and her father being able to reject it because there was no original kiddushin. No, kiddushin l'dat avia. No, maybe the additional requirement of kiddushin here has nothing to do with the first kiddushin, but has to do with the fact that we need her father on board. The pitui, the seduction, was kiddushin done by the ktano. So that kiddushin, we know we need nitrata'av. We need the father to acquiesce, and we need the father consent. So the mahor yimharenu is actually the father's consent to the kiddushin of the daughter. Not that it's an additional kiddushin or a new kiddushin, but rather consent to the original kiddushin. So not necessarily, or this isn't necessarily a proof or support to this position to explain the pasuk in such a manner that the seduction was not the same kiddushin. Could have been that the seduction was the same kiddushin. And when it says mahor yimarenu, that is the father's consent to the seduction by the pitui. So here, both of these, in both instances, we don't have a tzad to go. We don't have a proof either to Rabbi Asi or to Rav. I mean, the pasuk could be interpreted in either way. It could be interpreted to say that it's pitu l'shem kiddushin. It was seduction for kiddushin. And even though it was seduction for kiddushin, the reason we require an additional kiddushin is to get the consent of the father. In that case, it would be approved to Rav's position that both the daughter and the father can reject it. But the reason we don't say that is because you have an alternative way to explain the pasuk. The alternative way to explain the pasuk was that the pitui, the original seduction, was lo b'shem yishut, was not for marriage. And, so what do you need a pasuk for if it's not for marriage? Of course they can reject such a marriage. But we need the pasuk to tell us that you still pay a knas in that instance. The mefuta, the seducer, has to pay a fee, even though they're rejecting the marriage, and there was a case of seduction up front. That's why we have a pasuk teaches knas. So Rav Asi and Rav can explain the pasuk. And again, we don't have a proof in either direction. Right now, new Mishnah. So this Mishnah we quoted earlier to prove that Rabbi Yehuda could not be the author of our Mishnah. Why? Because the author of this Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon, as we're going to see in the Gemara in a second. Homer Elisha, Yitkach Shalibi Tamar Zu, Yitkach Shalibi Zu. Person goes ahead and hands dates to a woman to marry him, and he goes, marry me with this one, marry me with this one, marry me with this one. Each one, right, he says a new kiddushim. If any single date has the value of a pruta, then the marriage goes through. Mikudeshet. Vimlav in a mikudeshet. Then, but they're not mitzareif. Each tamara stands as an independent kiddushin, and you can't put them together. Bazu, bazu, bazu. If you say, hitkachi li with this one, and this one, and this one, and this one, that's a continuous chain. If in total, right, they have a pruta, then she's mikudeshet. V'im lav, in a mikudeshet. Now, a little play on here. Hayta ochelet rishonah, rishonah. As she receives the dates, she eats them. Then, in a mikudeshet, ashe b'char me'en sheve pruta. Then she's not married until one of them has a sheve pruta. What is this case modifying? Is this modifying the ratio or the seifa? That's subject to machlokas in the Gemara, and we'll see which case it's modifying. So now, the Gemara brings down, mantano itkachi itkachi. So we saw this earlier in the Gemara. That what? Who is the author? It says that in order to separate entities, to make them into independent entities, you must say itkachi. You must preface each statement with a new proposition of marriage. Right? That is Rabbi Shimon. Why? Amraba Rabbi Shimon. The Amar Shimon Shuvah lechol echad echad. The case where he's making multiple shuvot to multiple people, we will only consider it to be multiple shuvot when he says shuvah lezu, shuvah lezu, shuvah lezu, shuvah lezu. As opposed to the other opinions in the Gemara and Shmuel, who suggested that even if you said shuvah lezu, ubezu, 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 each one of those would stand independently as a separate shuvah. Rabbi Shimon believes, no, that you have to give the active verb here, whether it's itkachi or shvuah, to create separate actions. Not if you just make a list of bazoo, 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 that does not separate them, and therefore Shimon will be the author of our Mishnah. Now, now the Gemara is going to discuss this last case in the Mishnah where she's eating them. Ahai, on which case in the Mishnah does this reference? Ilema Aresha, if it's talking about the first case, my iria ochelet. Right? Why do we need to say even if she eats it? We said if she eats them, then one of them must have a shavet pruta. Afilu, right? Mankat. Even if she leaves them. Meaning that the same din is if she leaves them or she eats them. Because there has to be one of them must contain a shavet pruta. Right? So now, the hide kachli bezu kamar. Ela seifa. Must be it's on the seifa of the Mishnah. Ve'afilu bekamaita. So Mar says, and if that's the case, if it's talking about the seifa and she's eating them, and he's saying, actually bazoo, ubazoo, 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 and she's eating them as he's going along, how could it be that she could be married with the first date? The first date is no longer with us. And what does that become? That becomes a milveh. That becomes a loan to her. She's eating something that doesn't belong to her, so she now is going to have to return what she's eating. Rafilukamaita, the Gemara says, how could she be mitzkadesh with the first date if it's her gone already? Right? V'am milvehi. It's a loan. Because his statement, or his proposition, does not end until he gives her the last date. And if she's eating the dates before he reaches that last date, then she's taking something that hasn't been given to her, is not hers yet, and that is a mekadesh b'milva. Amar Rabbi Yochanan.
If the first one is shvuah,
but he's not done. He's not done. He wants to do bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. He's not saying that it's just this one. He has a whole list of things that he wants to go through over here, and he's not done with the proposition. The kedushin's not here yet. Right, the proposition of the Kedushin ends after he gives her all the dates. If you're right, Tosfos asks you a question. It says, we know that if someone's Mekadosh gives some sort of Kedushin, it says that after Lamed Yom, the Kedushin will be Chal. After 30 days, even if the money's not there, even if the item's not there, we say the Kedushin are Chal. Why? It should be the same problem here, that it's Mekadosh B'Milva. The Kedushin are not effective until the 30 days pass. And why isn't it a Mekadosh B'Milva? So Tosfos differentiates in the case exactly this, which is, depends when the statement of Kedushin is done. In that case, when he says in Kadesh Achar Lamed Yom, his statement of Kedushin is finished. The moment he gives it to her, he's finished his whole proposition. The effectiveness takes time to come about. That is not Mekadesh B'Milva for exactly a reason. He's given it to her, she has it in her hand, now it's done. But in our case, his proposition is not done until after all these dates are given. And since when she eats it, the proposition is still in process, that makes it into a loan. That's how it closest differentiates between cases like that. So where it says, going to be Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bari Shulchan, Bari Basar, Bari Sakin, Ve'en Lano Lecho, or En Lano Mishu Lecho, Bari Po Lecho. Well, yeah, we have a table, we have the meat, we have the knife. I mean, everywhere, right, we have a Mishnah that nobody knows how to explain over here. We have an end of a Mishnah, this last case in the Mishnah, and nobody can explain it. We can't explain it on the ratio, and we can't explain it on the Seifa. What's going on? So now we have two possibilities, of course. Right? Rav Shmuel, Dam Reiter Vayu, Dolam HaResha. Rav Shmuel say no, that last case goes on the ratio. Ah, what about itself, the question that we ask, what do we care if she eats it? Even if she just leaves it on the table, the only thing that's relevant is if one of them has a shoved fruta over here. So why says, lo mi bayi kamar? It's a lo mi bayi kamar. It's not, lozu abzu. Not only in a case where she puts them down, then we need a shavipruta in one of them in ilolo, if not. Right? That in the case of when she eats it, maybe we'll say, even though it's not the shavipruta, the fact that she eats it elevates the status of this tamara, because she's getting added benefit from this tamara by eating it, and therefore we will assign a higher value, or because of this extra anah, we'll assume that it is some sort of pruta here. Ema gamro makte nofsha. So in that case, she, despite the fact that the date was worth less than a pruta, nevertheless we say that she overcomes that issue because of the fact that she ate it and got extra anah. Mashmalan, that even in this instance, you need what? You need the full shavipruta in the value of the tamara. Right. So that's the way Rabbi Shmuel explained it. Rabbi Ami Amar, the Olam HaSeifa. So Rabbi Ami says, no, it's going on the second case. Umar Achiheba Hatmehen Shavipruta. So what are you going to do with the problem? Mekadesh Milka. So what does it mean? He says, no, you're reading the Mishnah wrong. When it says Achiheba Hatmehen Shavipruta, it doesn't mean any of them is Shavipruta. Achiheba Krona Shavipruta. And that means only if the last one that she eats has a Shavipruta will it work. Because if the last one's not as is not a milbet. Because at that point he's finishing the proposition and she's eating it immediately. I mean, so the two come simultaneously, his proposition of kedushin with the last tamara plus her eating it. In that case, if the last one has a shavipruta, she'll be married. Anything prior to that point is a milbet because she's eaten it already and the proposition hasn't been finished. So all those prior to the last one are a milbet, so they're irrelevant to the kedushin. Only if the last one is shavipruta will it work in that case where he's proposing and she's eating along the way. As opposed to the Seifa case, which is when he says bazoo, 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 that we add them all together. Yeah. In that case, we add them together because she hasn't eaten them. They're all sitting here, and they're all part of this big Kiddushin proposition. Whereas if she eats them along the way, this big proposition, right, is only effective on the last Tamara because she's eliminating each one as she eats it along the way. That's what Rabbi Ami says. So I'm a Rabbi, Shmamina, either Rabbi Ami Klat. From Rabbi Ami, we can conclude three things. Shmamina, the first one is, Amakash Mulve, Eina Mekudeshet. Right, one who is with the milvet doesn't work. Why? Otherwise, the previous tamarim, all the tamarim along the way, would have been effective. Right? The fact that only the last one's effective shows you that milvet does not work here. Ushmamina hamakadish b'milvet ube pruta data pruta. So the next thing is that if someone marries with multiple items, he's actually marrying her with a loan plus a pruta at the end. That when someone marries with a milvet plus a pruta, we see that her focus or her dat is on the pruta and the kedushin are effective. But you could have suggested, here he's offering her bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. She's eating them along the way. So now he has a big loan out to her and a little pruta at the end. So why not say that she's really focused on what you ate before as the kedushin, and the kedushin would fail in that instance because she's trying to be nitkadesh with a milvet. So that would say no. Rabbi Ami's position, or Rabbi Ami's suggestion here, is that when someone offers a milvet plus a pruta, her focus is on the pruta because she knows the pruta will be effective in generating the kedushin, and therefore we say, despite the fact that there's a milvet there, that does not detract from the kedushin, and the milvet the pruta at the end will be sufficient to generate the kedushin. And the last thing he concludes is, Shamino, ma'ot bi'alma chozrim. But in general, when somebody gives a gift, right, now this is an interesting situation. We're going to deal with it. The Gemara's going to have another case like this, even though it's not a continuation. As Tosa says, the next sugya stands on its own. But, for instance, the next sugya, I'll read you the first three lines of the next sugya so you understand what we're talking about here. Someone who tries to generate kiddushin with his sister, Rav Amar Ma'ot Chozrim. Rav says the money is returned. Why? Because everybody knows kiddushin don't work with your sister, and therefore nothing happens, and the money belongs to the brother who is proposing here. Shmo Mar Ma'ot Matana. Of course he knows it's not going to be kiddushin. He's giving it to her as a gift. We'll discuss in the Gemara what their opinion is based on. But Ma'ot Chozrim means in an instance where the kiddushin fails, right? In an instance where the kiddushin fails, what happens to the money that he's given to her? What happens? He's just given her a whole bunch of tamarim, and here we say the kiddushin failed. Now, does she have to return that money, or is that money a gift? Right, so now, let's think about our case over here. Right, so we have to say, ma'ot ba'alma chozrim. If you say, in general, right, that the money returns, if she has to return the money, then here in our instance where the condition will fail, that's why she is, each one, it becomes a milk, it becomes a loan. Why? Because really, he's only giving to her as a pikadon. He's only giving to her as to watch over it until the condition are effective. If the condition are not effective, what's she going to have to do? She's going to have to return all that money. Therefore, when she eats each of the tamarim along the way, she's really taking out a loan. He gave her a pikadon to watch and to return to him if the condition failed. In the meantime, what does she do? She starts popping them in her mouth. She's taking something that doesn't necessarily belong to her, and that becomes a milga. She's really borrowing it, and now she's going to have to replace it or give it back. That makes sense if we say that the whole problem here is a mekadesh of a milga. On the other hand, if we believe that ma'ot ba'alma are not chuzrim, that means that as he's giving her each item, right, each of those items becomes hers at that moment. And she, when she eats them, is eating her own stuff, not, right, the stuff that belongs to him, because in the end, if the kedushin fails, what is he going to do with this? If the kedushin fails, he's going to let her, she's going to keep it. So therefore, when she eats it, it's hers, really, that she's eating. Now, everybody would say, my dinner closed, maybe.
It's still not complete. Essentially, he's being Makadish, it was her own.
Alright, so very good. So the Rishonim, right, very good. So the Rishonim discussed that, that even though, so it's raising a good point here. If we say that it's Ma'ot, right, Inan Chuzrim, if we say that the money does not go back, then what happens? As he gives it to her, as she eats this one, it's a gift to her, she's eating it because the Kedushin's not done yet. The Kedushin's not done, then it becomes her like a gift. If it's a gift, she's eating her own stuff, and the Kedushin should have nothing to do with the first part. That's exactly what you're asking. So how can you prove anything for this? So does Rashi here explain that that's not true? Because when we say, when do we say becomes a matana or a milveh? That's once we determine what the final part of the statement is. And that means that until we know whether there's kedushin or not, each item stands as a pikadon, according to both opinions. That as soon as that the kedushin, these tamarim will remain within the context of kedushin until we know whether there is or is not kedushin. According to one who says that it's ma'oz matana, right? If it's ma'oz matana, that means that he gives her each date. Technically, they're not going to return to him. But the question is, what's the status of these tamarim? If the kedushin fail, these tamarim will turn into a gift, and there'll be nothing, right? There'll be heresies. On the other hand, if the kedushin succeeds in the end, if there's a successful kedushin, then the whole package, the whole thing remains as kedushin and not a matana. Even the first tamarim will be considered part of the big package of kedushin, because we don't know, like you guys said, we don't know whether it's going to be a matana or not until whether the kedushin is effective or not. And then because of that, the Rishonim suggests that according to one who says ma'ot inan chuzrin, they won't turn into a matana until the kedushin fails. Right? Until the kedushin fails, they remain part of the bigger picture of kedushin here, and they will be a part of the whole kedushin, that you can count all of them towards the kedushin. That's what the these Rishonim suggest.
You can see, why would you have to say that there's one uniform rule that no matter how it's given, right, you can direct from that that you're about to be brought out of it? In other words, the case of Rabbi Shmuel, right, where you can say everybody knows that you can't be kind of your sister. So it's clear he's giving her money or he's giving her something. He's not giving it for the purpose of kedushin, regardless of what he said. So therefore, it's a matana. But over here, this is a much more nuanced halachah there.
Very good. So Tosfos suggests, like Shaul suggests over here, Tosfos suggests there was a girsa in the Gemara that read the itmar in the next sugya that connects the two sugya together. Tosfos says that balad should not be there because the two sugya are not connected. Why? Because Tosfos says exactly what Shaul is just suggesting now, which is that even according to the Manda Omar that says by achot, that the most are chosrim, because everybody knows that nobody marries a sister, and that's why the money comes back, and he's not giving it as a matana, that over here, when it's more nuanced, where it's a case where it's not sure, he's not sure whether the condition will work, maybe he would agree that it's nitan l'shem matana. If you look down, Tosfos de Itmar says this, itigareis itmar below dalet, badin imahem, that makes sense. The machlokas about achoto is not relevant to our sugya. Why? Even according to the one who says by his sister the money comes back, Why? Because a person knows. Hey, it's a joke. The gamar not on the pikadon. So of course he's giving to her just to watch for him. He's not giving to her his kiddushin. If you don't know whether it's going to take effect or not, shemanat on the shem matana. Maybe give it as a gift. Right. So therefore, Tosfos says like you, Joel. I only read the other gemara, so you'd understand the context of this part. But Tosfos suggests like you that the two cases aren't connected. That even in the next case, if you say halva or pikadon, doesn't mean you agree in our case, because our case is a more nuanced case, and Tosfos separates the cases out. But nevertheless, we see from Masi at least that what ma'ot einan chozrin in this case over here, because we have to establish that it's a loan, and if it's not a loan, then that whole package will become a part of the kiddushin, and the halacha that he's establishing that it only works on the last fruta should not be true. It should be on the whole package that he gave, because it's a matana. If it's a matana, that means that each date stays in the picture of the kiddushin until we know for certain that the kiddushin failed. Whereas if we say that ma'ot chozrin, that means that as he's giving to her and she's eating it, and we don't know for certain this kiddushin, automatically it's a pikadon, right? If it's a pikadon, then it's a loan when she eats it, and they cannot be a part of the kiddushin. Right, so now the next gemara. So again, at this independent piece here, itmar, hamakadesh achoto, someone who marries his sister, tries to marry his sister, rav amar ma'ot chozrim, rav says the money comes back, shmul amar ma'ot matana, money is a gift. Rav amar ma'ot chozrim, adam yodeh she'en kiddushin tofsim achoto. Right, like Joel said, it's obvious. Everybody knows it doesn't work. But gomar menatam the shum pikadon. Therefore, when he gave it to her, he's giving it her to watch for him. The lame law, the shum pikadon. He says, well, so what is he trying to marry her for? Just say, I'm giving you a pikadon. Sabra lo makabla. He said, thought maybe she wouldn't keep it. She wouldn't take it from him. So this is the way he convinces her to keep it. He says, Rav Kaddish. Right? Shmuel savar ma'ok matana. Right? It's a gift. Adam yodeh she'en kiddushin tofsim achoto. But gomar menatam the shum matana. He goes ahead and gives it as a gift. The name of law, the shum matana. Says, so why not just say, I'm giving you a gift. Savar, Sifala Milso, he thinks that what? She's embarrassed to accept such a gift. So he does it in a roundabout way to get her to have the gift or accept the gift over here. Right, so now, Meitiv Ravina, the rest of the daf is going to deal with this sugya right here. It's a sugya that has nothing to do with our Gemara and Kedushin. It actually has to do with Chalo, and being Makrish Chalo. That is, Hamafrish Chalotok Kemach. Someone who separates out Chalo when it was still flour. Eino Chala. It's not Chala, the Gizel Biyala Kohen. And the Kohen is a Gazlan. If he keeps this, he must return it to the Baal. So now what's happening over here? The requirement of Chalot B'Mafrish is Arisotechem. Arisotechem is in the dough form. One may not separate out Chalot prior to being kneaded, meaning that Lisha, the kneading process, is what creates the Chiyuv Chalot, and that leaching process from that point onward is when you take off Chalot. You cannot take off Chalot from Kemach when it is still in the flour state. What's the problem over here? But my guess will be at Kohen. Why is it Gezel B'yad Kohen if he gives it? Let's say it's exactly like our case. Everybody knows you can't take challah off when it's flour, right? But not on the Shem Matana. And he gave it as a gift to the Kohen. So now if the Kohen keeps it, he got a present. Right now, why not say that? I mean, this sounds like against Shmuel's position over here. So Shiny Hotam, the Gemara says over there by Kemach, it's different. That'll end up creating a churva, a destruction, meaning that it'll create huge problems. Why is that? There'll be sometimes that the Kohen has less than 5/4 of Kemach, which we'll explain in a second, which is the Chiyuv Chalo, right? He'll add in this flour that he got from this individual, and he'll think that he doesn't have to be Mafrish Chalo. So let's think, what's going on? And he'll think that he's eating it with Tevel. What's going on over here? So in general, in order to be Chayav and Chala, you need a certain quantity. There's a minimum quantity in order to be Chayav and Chala. The Torah specifies what's that quantity? Asirita Ifa. Right? Asirita Ifa is the minimum quantity in order to have a Chala. What is an asirita eifa? Right, so now I'll give you this, but the breakdown in eifa is 3 sa'ah. A sa'ah is 6 kav, and a kav is 4 lukin, which means that every eifa is really worth, right, 72 lugim. Every eifa is worth 72 lug. Right? So every eifa is worth 72 lug, and I said it's asirit haifa. Asirit haifa means 1/10 of an eifa. So I take you 1/10 of a 72 lugim means that 7.2 lugim is what makes you chayav in chala. Now to translate that, because they don't deal with decimals or fractions, Right? So they have to, the Gemara says, what they say is that it's seven lugim, and when the 0.2 lugim actually get translated into beitzot. Beitzah, there are six beitzah in every lug. Six beitzah in every lug. So if I take 0.2 lug, multiply by six, I get 1.2 beitzin. So the way the Gemara expresses that is that to be chayv and chalal, you have seven lug, one and one-fifth beitzah, which is 1.2 beitzin, right? So in order to be chayv chalal, you need seven lugim, one beitzah, and one-fifth of a beitzah. That would be simple, right? That would be simple, except that the twice in history, they expanded the measurements. They grew the measurements, and when they grew the measurements, right, they changed the measurements. So they did one struth in Yerushalayim, they added a sixth in Yerushalayim to the measurements, not to the size. The size of the measurements got bigger, right? And they did an additional six in Sipponi. Right, I'm going to do the math like Rashi, so that you can understand. So Rashi says, okay, what is once when you grow it by six, is six milipar, means they actually made it a one-fifth, right, a one-fifth bigger. So how do I do that? Basically, they multiply everything by five-sixths. That's what happens, because if the measurement gets bigger, you need five-sixths as much as you did before to get to the same measurement. So what does Rashi do? Rashi takes the sixth lug out of that big seven, he takes the sixth lug. The six becomes a five, right? So now you have five lug left. Then you have, what do you have left over? You have left over one lug plus a beitzah and a fifth, right? That's what's left over. That one lug is really worth what? That one extra lug is worth six beitzah. Right? Each lug is worth six beitzah. So if I take six beitzah, the six beitzah become five beitzah, right? Five six of that becomes five beitzah. If I take the five beitzah and I take one and one fifth of a beitzah, that becomes one beitzah. One and one fifth translates into one. That's 5/6 of 1.2 is 10, or one, which becomes what? It becomes a one beitzah. I take one beitzah plus five beitzah, that becomes six beitzah. Six beitzah is a lug. Right? So Rashi says I have five lug plus one lug. That's six lug. So in Yerushalayim, when they grew the size of the measurements, the requirement for challah went from seven lug plus one and one fifth beitzah to six lug. Right? Then they went to Sipori and they grew them another six. So what do I do if I multiply by 5/6? If I have six lug and I multiply by 5/6, it means five lug. So exactly. So Sipori, the requirement for challah, and what the Gemara says is chameshit rivaim. Rivaim is because every lug is four kav. All right. Because I think chameshit rivaim means five lug. That's how much you're going to be. To build chayov in challah, you need chameshit rivaim. That's the size of challah that you need. So over here, what's going to happen with this kohen? This kohen is going to say, listen, I have less than five lug worth of kemach, of flour over here, right? Less than five lug of flour. Then what am I going to do with it? What am I going to do with this? I got this flour from this guy who gave it to me as challah. If it's challah, it's not chayov, so I have challah separated from it again. So what's he going to do? He's going to throw that in with the other flour that he had that's less than five lug. But now, his quantity is greater than five lug. But the coin is going to think, I don't need to take challah off of this. Why? Because the additional amount I added was not chayav and challah. The additional amount I added was challah from someone else. But truthfully, that kemach is not really challah. Why? Because you're not allowed to be makrish challah from kemach. So what he put in there was really chayav in challah, and now he has more than five lug, and he really needs to take off challah. But he's going to think he doesn't need to take off challah. Why? Because what he put in there was really putter, he thought. Right? So that's the problem. That's the korban.
Why was it chayav in challah?
Because it's greater than five lug. The shear is greater than five lug.
The coin has to be challah?
Yeah, if he takes hevel, if he doesn't. Coin always has to be makrish. He can keep for himself once he's makrishin.
Because he did the tzara, etc.
Right, yeah, he has to do challah truma. A coin is trying to be makrish to take it out of the status of hevel, but then he can eat it himself. He doesn't have to give it to anyone else, but he still has to be makrish challah truma. So this coin, if he needs more than five gold of flour, he's going to be obligated to separate out challah from it. But he thinks he doesn't have more than five gold because he had less than five gold when he started, and what he threw in he thought was challah, which is not chayav in having challah. It's challah, doesn't have to have challah again, be mufresh from it. So he throws that in, now he gets a greater shear, which will require him to be mafresh challah, but he thinks he doesn't have to, because he thinks he has less than a shear that's really chayav. And that's the churba that will come out of this. If we allow people to give flour, challah and flour, the kohen's going to think he really has challah here, and he's going to be mixing it with his other stuff, and he's going to end up in a position where he thinks he doesn't have to take off challah, but he really does have to take off challah. So that's what Gemara says. He'll end up eating tevel because because he really has more than he needs. Verse 8, didn't you say, didn't you just say to us, people know that you can't take challah off of kemah? So if that's the case, the Kohen is going to know, and he won't mix them together. What are you talking about? Verse 6, they know, and they don't know. What does it mean? He knows that you can't take off challah kemah. But he doesn't know why. The suffer tamayumai, what's the reason you're not allowed to be makish challah when it's flour? The reason you don't want to do it is because then the Kohen has to do extra work for the challah. Now he has to knead it. If you give it to him when it's dough, then you've already moved the process along and you give it to him. Here the Kohen's getting in a kemach, he's going to have to do extra work to this item. So you know what the Kohen says? You know what? Tircha the Kohen, I'll be mochel on that tircha, and therefore really is challah. I mean, they know that it doesn't work as kemach, but he'll think the reason it doesn't work as kemach is because the Kohen has to do extra work. He said, listen, I don't mind doing the extra work, I'll take it as kemach. The real reason it doesn't work is because he's not chayv and challah until it reaches the level of dough. And he'll make that mistake. So Mar says, Diavi Truma, right? Below to challah, Chiyotiyala, Chalami, Makom Acher. So why don't we just say to him, let it be challah, but it'll have to be makrish challah on this item from somewhere else. So why do we say to him, it's a return? Let's say to him, take off challah. Tell the Kohen, when you get to kemach, you're going to have to separate challah off of that kemach. Just tell him that. Milot's not. Don't we have a Mishnah? We have a similar type of case. Min enakuv, al she'en enakuv. When you separate out truma from two pots, you have two plants in pots. One potted plant has a hole in the bottom, makes a chayiv de oraisa in truma. One plant has no hole in the bottom, makes a chayiv in truma only in midrabanan. And you went ahead and you took off of the plant that had a hole in the bottom from the de oraisa pot, you took off of both pots here. Truma, that what you separate out is truma, even though you took truma on the pot that was only chayiv midrabanan from something that was chayiv midoraisa. So you're actually taking off truma from something that's oraisa that's really not truma. It's really not truma. Below tochad, you see all that truma. Umaser mimakom acher. That little piece that you took off that he thinks is truma, right, really is not truma because it came off of you were taking it or separating it from a pot that was not chayav and truma, really midoraisa. So this extra piece of truma that you're giving is not really truma, it's really still tevel. So we give it to the Kohen doesn't have to return it, he just has to separate it off, truma is a maestro from that little piece from somewhere else. So Mar says, why don't we trust the Kohen here also to do the same thing? Tell him this challah is not really challah, and you have to separate a challah from it from somewhere else. Mar says, trey money tzoit, b'chay mana lo tzoit. The Kohen will listen to us when there are two pots here. When you say he's makris truma from a pot with a hole in it on a pot and not a hole, you can say to him, listen, that other pot's not really chayav, you have to separate off extra truma over here. Here, the challah is challah. He's not separating, it's one item. He's giving him flour. You can say to him, take off more challah. He says, I got challah already. That's not the case. He won't listen to us in that case. That's one possibility to explain this whole price and why it won't be a problem for Shmuel over here, because it's not a gift. It's not a gift because of the problem that the Kohen might mix it in with his and mix it in with his challah, think it's okay, and it's really not okay. So that's the case here. Vibai Sema, that the focus is not on the Kohen, the focus is on the Balabait. The Olam Kohen mitzvah tzait. The Kohen would listen to us. The Sagar Balabait nitzkana isato. Probably that the Balabait will think that he gave challah, and now he doesn't have to separate the challah anymore. And that's not true, because when he took it off of the flour, he did nothing. And now when he goes and needs it, the dough that he has, now is chayiv and challah. And he think he already gave challah. But he'll make up a timlo, and he'll end up eating with timlo. So we force the Kohen to give it back to the Balabait, so he knows it's not really challah. So Amar Tadam Yedesh Yemafashim Challah Kemach. Didn't you say that people know that you're not allowed to be Makish Challah Kemach? So why don't he knows it's not good challah? He knows he has to separate the challah again. But it says Yudea, Ben Yudea. Yudea Yemafashim Challah Kemach. He knows that you can't separate it out from flour. Ben Yudea the Sabar, Taim Amashum Mai. He doesn't know what the reason is. He thinks the time is from the Tircha the Kohen. He thinks it's because the Kohen is what? He didn't want to do the Kohen to do extra work. Tircha the Kohen, Kavlale. In this case, the Kohen was willing to accept the flour, and when he accepted the flour, he thinks that's it, it's good. The Kohen was willing to accept it even though it was prior to Lisha, and therefore it's good challah. It's obviously true. So in that case, the Baal Bait will make the mistake that he thinks he's done with challah. And that's not true, because he needs to separate challah once he needs the dough. So my sister, it's obviously true. The acts of each one. Why don't we say that it is challah, and then he'll have to take off challah second time. Why? Because it's the same case. Milot's none. This is the opposite case that we had before. Mishaino nakuv ala nakuv. If he takes off of a plant that is potted without a hole in it, it's only chayav midrabanan, on a plant that is chayav midoraisa. So he separates off a plant that's really patur, on a plant that is chayav truma. That, what he gave to the Kohen remains truma. V'yachzer v'yitron. And he has to go back and separate off the pot that has a hole in it. Off the doraisa, body has to separate again, because he didn't separate separate truma from it. When he took it out of the plant with a hole in it, he only took off a plant that was 5 midrabanan. That plant midoraisa did nothing. That truma midoraisa is zero. So now when he goes back and tells the balabait, you have to separate it again from the plant that has a hole in it. That's 5 midoraisa. So Gemara says, "Haukimna betray mani tzayis b'chay mani lo tzayis." Right? Gemara says no, because in that instance, we already told you this. When's the balabait going to listen to you? When there are two pots, you can say to him, "Take off the other pot. You didn't fix this pot." But if he has the same flour that he took off of and now makes into dough, you tell him, "Take off again." He says, "Man, what are you talking about? I already took off of this flour." The Gemara says, "Below tzayis." Is that true that he doesn't listen? That's not. We have a mission. I told him, "Kishotz v'nim samara." Someone who separates out gourds and finds out that they're bitter. Avtiach v'nim sasaruach. He takes up truma from watermelon, some sort of melon, and he finds out that it's rotten inside. Right? Truma. What he gave is truma. V'yachzor v'yitrom. He has to give truma again. So here's the same package of items, and nevertheless, we make him give truma again. Why are you making him give truma again? We're going to say, why is he going to listen to you? He's not going to listen to you take out of the same bundle or same fruits again the truma. Says Shani Hotam, that is different over here. Why is it right to truma ma'ayyadi? When you give a bad fruit as truma, it works as truma min a Torah. Why? Mitzvah Rabbi Eli. Don't worry, Eli, you're not a Torah min a Rabbi Yafesh, a truma to truma. How do I know when you give bad produce as truma, good produce, that it works? Shinema, veloti si alav chait brim chimet chobo. And it says, when you take off the best, you won't have a chait. You won't have a sin. When you give the good stuff as truma, you won't have a sin. What's implied in that? When you give the bad stuff, you do have a chait. Wait. If it's not kadosh, if it's not really truma, then why does he have a chait? I mean, that he didn't do anything. He gave him something, but it wasn't truma. It wasn't mafish truma. The only way that can be considered a chait is if he's really mafish truma. So if you take off bad stuff and good stuff, it is affected truma. You've done something wrong, you have a chait, but it's affected truma. So in that case, we'd let the guy balabait stay and leave the stuff and say, take it off again. Why? Because even if he doesn't listen to us and doesn't take it off again, he made it all right, he's already close. He gave truma, and the truma's fine, and what he's eating is not teva. So he doesn't listen to us. The worst situation is that he's over at Darabonon. In our case over here, by challah, if he doesn't listen to us, after we tell him to take off challah again when it's dough, he's over Doraisa. The challah he gives him up is worthless. It's worthless. We can't say to him, listen again. Right? If he doesn't listen now, he's in big trouble. We have a challah that's something dough that's chayvi Doraisa and challah, he's not giving it. So in that case, we can't say that. We don't say he says it, and the coin is to give it back to him to remind him that he must take off challah again when it becomes dough. Okay, we'll stop over here.